Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is David Holwerk. He's the Director of Communications at the Kettering Foundation, a nonprofit organization in Dayton, Ohio, which is dedicated to citizen engagement in the political process. Before joining Kettering, he worked for over 30 years in print journalism at a variety of newspapers. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Grant. It's a pleasure to be here.
I thought that we'd talk about some of the problems with the American political process and then consider some of the things that Kettering is working on in order to address them. So let me start with one of these. According to just about whatever poll you look at, Americans' trust in government and political institutions are at near modern low points right now. So what do you see as the biggest challenges to American democracy as it's taking place right now?
Well, there are a whole, needless to say, there's a whole complex of them. But to me, the starting point is to think about the fact that it's not just that citizens don't trust the government. The government doesn't trust citizens either. Mm. So there's a mutual distrust that just sort of feeds on itself and amplifies itself. And when I say that the government doesn't trust citizens, you can see that by asking the question, so what is it that citizens are actually doing? What is it that government wants citizens to do? Not just government, but a lot of institutions want citizens to be, you know, recipients of information and then do whatever they're told to do. And so when you have a lot of people who aren't really doing anything in relation to self-governance, to self-rule, not just in terms of government, but in terms of the basic kinds of decisions that go into being a citizen in a democracy, needless to say, people get cranky.
People who are looking up at this, that they have an intuitive understanding of this disconnect, and so what's their incentive to get engaged if that's the situation that they think they're encountering?
Well, I don't think that citizens have a clear incentive to get engaged in those discussions. I do think that elected officials and policymakers could discern a clear incentive for them to become engaged with citizens, because it gives them a clearer idea of what people hold valuable, what sort of space is available. For instance, give you a good example. If you talk to people in national politics around Washington, it's an article of faith that Social Security is the third rail of American politics. Mm-hmm. Simply can't talk about it. People won't talk about it. It's going to be just death to even talk about changing Social Security. When you get citizens together across age groups to talk about Social Security, they are much more likely to say, well, you know, I'm not sure that the current situation is sustainable. Young people are worried about their parents not getting – their parents and grandparents not having Social Security. Older people are worried about younger people paying the burden of keeping Social Security alive. So when you do that, it doesn't very much look like a third rail. But the national national conversation is so often – framed as a binary choice, yes, no. Keep it as it is, do it, privatize it. So it becomes a black, white, red, blue, head-butting, yes, no conversation. When people are actually willing to consider a broader range of options than that. So you have the problem that politicians, elected officials, often are elected by taking one of those sides in the binary choice, and then they're stuck with it. And they're afraid to get off of it, and they can't see any way to get off of it. And the interest groups that have helped him get elected are unwilling to move off of it, to move off of the head-butting binary choice. And so you're just stuck. And meanwhile, you have citizens who are scratching their head and worried and frustrated. But you notice when you think about it that way, the notion that citizens aren't engaged looks a little different. In fact, frequently citizens are engaged in stuff. It's just not in the same terms. I mean, there are lots of people that are worried about health care costs. There are lots of people that are worried about the future of Social Security. And when you get citizens together and get them to talking about it, it's very clear that they are engaged and are willing to be engaged in that. But there's no entree for engagement into the national conversation, into the conversation that's dominated by interest groups and think tanks and policymakers.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with David Holwerk, Communications Director for the Kettering Foundation. Yeah, let me get into that example that you gave there about the inability to have this authentic conversation about Social Security among politicians and among elected officials, because it does seem like, and I wanted to tap into your 30 years of experience in print journalism here, it does seem like the media is a big player in that problem. Because you get these situations where, again, if there was a potential space for an elected official to say, look, it's more complicated than this. It's not this red, blue, black and white kind of thing. And we need to be able to talk about it. Let's start that conversation. Immediately, you know that you're going to get a story saying Representative X is now saying they're willing to tax, or Representative X is now saying they're willing to cut. And so we get into that kind of dialogue. Can you talk a little bit about where then in the media you might be able to see space for the kind of authentic conversation that you see people wanting to have about these kinds of issues?
All journalists, myself included, work from a sort of framework of a menu of story frames that you impose on things, and they tend to be framed around conflict, hero-villain, villain-victim, great man, great woman, triumph and tragedy, difficulties and rebirth from, I mean, you know, there's this whole set of sort of cliched frames. And rarely do you see, story that can capture the nuance, the indecision, the willingness to consider things differently. And part of that is because when that happens with citizens, there's no story form that immediately comes to mind. If I had been an editor, a reporter, and I'd gone to my assigning editor and said, I want to do this story because people are talking about Social Security that are different. It's in a way that's different than it sounds in the national dialogue. The editor's response or my response when I was an editor would have been, well, that's just people talking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you look at what citizens actually do in a democracy, a lot of it is centered around the way they talk about them talking to each other. Civic discourse is one of the fundamental building blocks of a democracy. In fact, the Kettering Foundation a specific type of civic discourse is a fundamental building block of democracy. And so, the journalists just don't know what to do if people are talking outside of the framework that they've got to work with.
I want to explore exactly those types of conversations in a couple minutes, but let me ask you another question about the media first, again, drawing on your experience. So if you were to take these story frames that you were talking about, which one, as an editor, would you be wanting to apply to print media itself in recent years? It does seem like it's experiencing some kind of a free fall. How would you describe what's going on with print media recently?
Well, I it would be difficult not to apply the story frame of obituary to it. I think it's important to understand what's happening in newspaper business, journalism. It's a failure of the business model. It is not a failure of journalism. And in fact, in some ways, there's more readership of newspaper content now than there ever was. It's just that people aren't paying for it. I mean, you go to Google News and you look at that, it's mostly newspaper content. It's just free. So nobody's making it. So the newspaper companies aren't, newspaper publishing companies aren't making any money. And they can't figure out how to make money off their websites in a way that is comparable to the way, you know, that they made money off of print newspapers for decades. And so it is a business model crisis. It is not a crisis in the craft so much.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with David Holwerk. He's the Director of Communications at the Kettering Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to civic engagement. Well, let's bring Kettering into this conversation now. Can you give me first just a brief overview of the work that the foundation does?
We study the work. I like to frame it as we study the work of citizens, communities, and institutions in democracy. We work through what we call joint learning. That is, we know some stuff and we are learning some stuff constantly. And we work basically in an exchange with people. Here's what we have figured out and what we're puzzling over. Tell us what you're working on, what's happening in your communities, and let's see where those two things fit together and what we can learn from each other.
And one of the things that your organization, as I understand it, is big on is these kinds of conversations that you were referring to before, like the more substantive conversations that citizens will have, try to have about Social Security and about other pressing issues. So you focus on this idea of public deliberation as an experience, an exchange that's different and better than simple polling. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, sure. I would say that the foundation, one of the foundation's principal insights, we asked the question, what does it take to make democracy work as it should? And I think one of our principal insights is that the critical ingredient in that is a critical component is a civic discourse of a particular type. You try to frame the conversation in terms of things that people hold valuable. That doesn't mean that you're going to have an easy conversation or that the truth will suddenly be revealed or that the conversation will even necessarily be civil. But it does mean that you're then actually making choices that you're aware that you're making of the trade-offs in the choices. And the trade-offs are around, I mean, they may be about money and they may be about safety, but they're really around things that people hold valuable. That's a citizen-centered conversation, not a technocrat or politician-centered conversation.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is David Holwerk from the Kettering Foundation. All right, let's say that conversation happens. It's a productive one. But the question then always is, how do you take that conversation and the findings from it and move it up into the political system? Because if it doesn't do that, then you are kind of limited in some way to having an exercise where people have had a good conversation, but that's where it stays. So how does Kettering try to make that kind of thing happen? How do you folks see the connection there between the kind of conversation you're trying to get folks to have and then the political process taking account of it?
Well, let me make it clear that we don't try to make that happen. We do look for instances where it does happen and then try to understand what may or may not be at work in those instances.
So what have you learned from that then?
Usually when it happens as a result of some kind of crisis where happens, for instance, in some of the post-Katrina work in New Orleans, where the problem was simply so problems were simply so overwhelming that without a relationship that was what involved what we would call co-production, there was no chance of the city recovering at all. Citizens and elected and appointed public officials had to figure out ways to work together on some things. And the question is, how can you keep that happening without having as a starting point the city being destroyed by a hurricane? And I don't know the answer to that.
We started off the conversation. You said something intriguing and provocative about the government not trusting the citizens when I brought up the citizens not trusting the government. Let me ask you a question that's related to that in a way. What can ordinary citizens do if their political officials and the political system as they're experiencing it won't engage with them? And particularly, what can they do if at an individual level voting for someone in a different party is not acceptable to them politically? So they've got a situation where they don't feel like they're being engaged, but there's not an alternative that really makes sense. Where does that leave them?
Well, let me just go off for a minute, talk a minute about that situation where people don't want to vote for somebody in the party that they're not registered in. Increasingly, that's not even an option because, we're in a situation now where instead of voters choosing their leaders, elected officials are choosing their voters by manipulating the first the lines of legislative and city council districts, and then second by a series of techniques and technologies in electoral politics that drive voters away and keep the decision in the hands actually of a fairly small number of voters. I mean, for instance, when I was in California at the Sacramento Bee, this has changed now, but there are 138, I think, state legislators, and there were maybe 8 competitive seats or 12 or 15 because they were all one-party districts. So you didn't have to worry if you were a Republican in Sacramento, you didn't have to worry about voting for Democrat. I mean, you didn't have any choice. There weren't it wouldn't matter how you voted, you were going to have a Democrat supporting the legislature. And just up the hill in Placer County, it was reversed. You were going to have a Republican no matter what. So what citizens do in those situations, I think, are either to become disengaged or to figure out how to be a citizen in a way that doesn't involve that doesn't involve the government. And that means that citizens act as citizens at the most basic level, which is they see some problem that they can work on with somebody in their neighborhood or their school or their church or their civic club or something, and they work on that problem with them. And when that happens, then you've got a pretty good chance of making some progress and eventually maybe getting something to happen in the electoral system as well.
But here's the problem with that, as I see it, for your alternative, is that sounds great, but on the ground, that's something that takes a lot of time. That takes a lot of time for people to do. Most people have lawns to mow. They have children to taxi around in their cars. So you're talking about something that at the end of the day I think is going to be only able to be done by a fairly small number of activists. So where does that leave the rest of the folks?
Well, I guess I don't exactly agree with you. It does take time. People are more engaged in that stuff than it appears to be. The problem is that the engagement is atomized. It's disaggregated. And so it doesn't produce results that are visible at the legislative district level, say. I don't know personally how it translates from one to the other, but I do think that there's more of that going on than many people who are in professions that implicate themselves in public life see. That's certainly more of that going on than journalists see. There's more of it going on, I'm confident, than elected officials see. The challenge, one of the things that the Kettering Foundation studies is, we have a line of in our research program called that is devoted to what it takes for elected officials to see the value of a deliberative public. This deliberative public is a public where people are working together to solve shared public problems. So there's no quick answer to it. There's no quick solution to this problem. And it does take time. It takes the time of citizens, and it takes time for these changes to take effect.
Let me get to the three questions at the end. What's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I'm 67 years old, so I suppose it would be called Beat the Reaper.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Well, now, it depends on who you ask. I hate to be found out to be have been wrong about something, which is a terrible trait because I have been so frequently wrong about so many things. I mean, when you write as many editorials as I did, it's inevitable that you're going to be wrong. I just tried to never be in doubt.
And third, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
That I was actually able to get and hold a job. I really didn't think that was likely to be possible, and lo and behold, it has proved to be.
That was David Holwerk. David, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Grant.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.